This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Kekin for Jane Lindholm. Okay, pop quiz time. Listeners, what's this sound? Okay, if you said a pair of loons calling to each other, you win the prize. If you said wolves or something else, wrong answer. While the haunting call echoes across many lakes in the region, it is not guaranteed to be something that you'll always be able to hear. The loon population has rebounded somewhat recently, but the birds are still at risk from many factors. One of the biggest threats? Lead poisoning. Well, several states have adopted laws banning certain types of lead fishing tackle meant to protect loons. The problem remains. Harry S. Fogle joins me by phone to talk about the issue and how loons are doing across New England. He's executive director and senior biologist at the Loon Preservation Committee based in New Hampshire. Harry Fogle, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So first of all, give us a quick introduction as to what sort of birds loons are and where they live.
Sure. So loons are water birds. They are not ducks. One of the fastest ways to really annoy a loon researcher is to call them ducks or waterfowl. They're actually more closely related to the penguins and the tube-nosed swimmers, which are the albatrosses, the petrels, and the shearwaters. And so they split their time between freshwater lakes during the breeding season and the Atlantic Ocean during the winter.
So most of us have heard that amazing call, and I want to talk about those loon calls for a minute or so. There are a few different kinds that you'll hear, the wail, like the one we played at the top of the segment, and then there's that distinctive laughing sound. Let's take a listen to that. So do scientists know what those different calls mean?
We think we have a pretty good idea of what those mean. So, for instance, the whale call that you had played at the beginning of this segment is often given when loons who are sleeping on their territory, and unless they're sitting on a nest, loons will always sleep on the water of their territory. And so a mated pair of loons will be sleeping over the course of the evening. They will drift away from each other. One or the other will wake up, and they will give that whale call. That wakes up its mate, and its mate then gives that return call, and they come towards each other. So from those actions, from those behaviors, we infer that a whale means, here I am, where are you, and come closer.
And what about that laughing sound that we just heard?
Yes, so the tremolo is actually an alarm call for loons. So anything that causes a loon distress, you may hear that tremolo call. But sometimes in the morning, if you're out on the lake, some people will say, oh my goodness, I heard the loons tremoloing and something terrible must have happened. It's not always the case because the tremolo is also the most dramatic statement of territory ownership that a female loon can make. And so sometimes male and female loons will kind of antiphonally call back and forth, tremoloing in the night, and that is essentially advertising territorial ownership of that body of water by a pair of loons.
Those calls are so dramatic when you're on a lake and you hear them. I love to hear those calls.
Absolutely.
So how are loons doing across New England? I know it differs state by state and even region by region, but how are they doing right now in the New Hampshire-Vermont area?
Yeah. Well, in New Hampshire, I would describe the population as stable to increasing. In Vermont, loons are doing better. So they are actually growing at a good clip. But they're doing that with a lot of help from an interested public and from organizations like Loon Preservation Committee here in New Hampshire and the Vermont Loon Recovery Program, which is a great program of Vermont Center for Eco Studies in Vermont. And so we do a combination of things to help out these loons. And so we're doing monitoring to assess the state of that population. So I like to say that our work begins and ends by counting loons, because counting those birds gives us our first indication of problems with the population, and it's also the ultimate measure of our success in keeping these birds common. Then we do research to assess and dig into some of those threats and ways in which we can mitigate those threats, and we put that research to use in focused management, and that includes floating loon nesting rafts to help loons that have been displaced from shoreline development, or loons on lakes that have rapidly changing water levels, because these rafts float, so they go up and down as water levels float. And then we also work to protect nesting pairs of loons through putting up signs and rope lines. And in especially in New Hampshire, and even more so in Vermont, loons are very intensively managed. And so the success that we've had has really relied on the management and the education and kind of a comprehensive conservation program that has been at work for many, many years in both of those states.
Well, I want to jump to lead poisoning, because I was surprised to read that that is a major threat right now to loons. And explain why that is.
Yeah. So from banding loons, and this is part of that research again, from banding these loons to so that we can recognize individuals and track individuals over their lifetimes, we've learned many things about the natural history of loons that turn out to be really important. And so one thing that surprised us was to learn that loons don't begin to breed on average until they're 6 years old. And then, of course, after that, they have a maximum. They'll lay a maximum of 2 eggs. And in New Hampshire and in Vermont, typically a loon pair will have a chick every second year that actually survives to fledge from the lake.
Wow!
And so, any animal that has those life history characteristics—a delayed age at first breeding and then essentially very poor reproductive success—the key to maintaining a viable population of that animal is to keep those birds alive from year to year, so that they have many opportunities over their lifetime to breed. And so anything that is affecting adult mortality of loons is something that we take very seriously, and you don't need to go very much further than lead sinkers and lead-headed jigs, because in New Hampshire, that fishing tackle, lead fishing tackle, is responsible for close to half of the documented adult loon mortality that we see. And in Vermont, I think it is also approaching that level.
So they eat the lead sinkers, and then the lead dissolves in their system and kills them, poisons them?
Absolutely. Because loons have no teeth, so they need to swallow their food whole. And then after that, they forage along the lake bottom for these little pebbles. And they ingest those pebbles. They hold that in the gizzard, the muscular portion of their stomach, and the grinding action of those rocks. So those act as surrogate teeth to grind up the fish that they have just eaten. The problem is that every once in a while, a loon can mistake one of a lead split shot sinker, so these really small split shots, for one of those pebbles that they're ingesting. So that's one way in which loons can swallow a lead sinker. There are two other ways, though, and we've actually found that these are more common. One is that the typical prey item for a loon might be a 4 to 8 inch yellow perch, but loons will on occasion swallow much larger fish. And when you get into fish that are larger than that 8 inch yellow perch, you're talking about a fish that could conceivably break an angler's line. And when they break that line, they're going to be trailing still a length of line and a lead sinker or a lead-headed jig. And when a loon gets that fish, it also gets the sinker or the jig.
Well, very briefly, I want to ask you about laws that have been passed to ban lead shots or lead sinkers, and what sort of impact have they had?
Yeah. So New Hampshire actually became the first state in the nation to ban certain sizes of lead sinkers and lead-headed jigs. And it has been a gradual process. So the initial legislation dealt with only the sinkers and very, very small lead-headed jigs. Since then, we have introduced successive pieces of legislation to build on that standard to arrive at what we feel is a protective standard for loons. And so the legislation that is in effect in New Hampshire as of today restricts the sale and use of lead sinkers and lead-headed jigs of 1 ounce or less in weight. And we feel that that's a protective standard. In Vermont, I believe that it's sinkers of a half an ounce or less, and no legislation really on lead-headed jigs. Mm-hmm. And here in New Hampshire, we found that those lead-headed jigs are responsible for more than half of the lead poisonings in the state. And so we would love to see a more protective standard in Vermont, as well as in Maine and Massachusetts and in New York as well, where there are still some decent populations of loons, and we would like to keep it that way.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us about loons. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. It's an important issue. Thanks for your interest.
That was Harry Vogel, Senior Biologist and Executive Director of New Hampshire's Loon Preservation Committee. If you want to know more about loons in Vermont, the Vermont Center for Eco Studies operates the Vermont Loon Conservation Project, headed up by loon biologist Eric Hansen, who's been working for years to preserve and protect the state's loons. There's a link to their website on our show page at vpr.net.